Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, a summit the world is watching.
Mr. President of the Russian Federation, Mr. President of the United States of America, on behalf of the Swiss government, I would like to welcome you to Geneva, the city of peace.
CNBC's Eamon Javers on the ground.
So many issues for the two men to hash through to see if they can find any agreement.
And New York Times columnist Tom Friedman.
Vladimir Putin has been America's ex-boyfriend from hell. We really want to date other people. We really want to focus on China, but he won't go away.
And from nonprofits to public office, the Robin Hood Charity's former CEO is aiming to take on inequality as a candidate for governor in Maryland. Wes Moore.
What we saw with COVID-19 is that we saw not just an exposure, but an expansion of this really nefarious wealth gap that continues to persist within our society.
Those stories, plus Elizabeth Holmes heads to court and workers everywhere are headed back to the office. It's Wednesday, June 16th, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Andrew Ross Sorkin and Mike Santoli. Joe is off today, but Mike, it's good to have you with us.
So great to be down
here. Thanks for being
here.
Yeah, we were just talking about how beautiful Times Square is and what a magnificent place this
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
You see, they got rid of the porta potties, so we've got that going for us today. Let's take a look at the U.S. equity futures, because everybody is really on hold at this point, waiting to see what happens with the Fed. Dow is down by about 55 points. S&P is down by about 3. The NASDAQ is up by close to 10. Points. And this comes after a slightly down day for the markets yesterday. The NASDAQ was the biggest decliner yesterday, down by about 0.7%. But again, people just waiting to see what happens with this Fed decision. Mike, what do you think the odds are that there's going to be like a snap of activity after that meeting?
I think there will always, there's always a snap of activity. The market's kind of being held in place just to see if expectations are confirmed, that there's a little more of an acknowledgement that they're getting closer to this point where they have to kind of withdraw some of the bond buying down the road. They have to acknowledge these hot inflation prints without necessarily saying it's anything but a temporary blip. So I think that's where we're going. The market has been unusually just kind of fixed
to feel
in
like
place.
Summer, right? It's starting to feel like summer, lower volumes, not a huge amount of activity.
Exactly.
But you mentioned the bond market, too. And let's take a look at where the Treasury market stands right now. This has been the really interesting thing to watch. Interesting like watching paint dry. But if you look at this, the 10-year note is sitting just below 1.5%, 1.489%. Brian Sullivan was talking earlier this morning about how maybe we saw a little bit of a temper tantrum or a taper tantrum that took place earlier, maybe 6 months ago, when you saw the bond yields really move up at that point. Is that...
I think what you saw was, a crescendo of inflation panic. It wasn't so much taper. It was, is inflation really going to, you know, get out of hand to the upside?
The numbers have only
that really has subsided.
Then.
Yes, but I think everyone is looking at the one-off factors in there. And also, just it's an unusually huge bond move to go from 0.5% to 1.75% in a few months. That's just been kind of working its way off, that excess move. And I think that's part of the deal. And there's just a lot of liquidity everywhere that includes to go into treasuries right now. A lot of technical factors also people talking about. Less than expected treasury issuance. A lot less than we thought a few months ago because the Treasury's just kind of working down its cash balance.
Right.
How are you feeling today? Are you worried about getting an impartial jury?
An update on the trial of former Theranos CEO Elizabeth Holmes. Jury's selection is scheduled for August 31st. The judge whittled down her team's proposed jury questionnaire. They had 112 questions on the list, guys. 45 pages. They got it down now to 20 pages. One of Holmes' attorneys objected and made it clear the defense team is worried about finding jurors who don't have a bias in the case already, if they know about it. Holmes did win permission for breaks in the trial to nurse her newborn child, due to be born next month. The judge said there will be a designated quiet room for Holmes to tend to her child during the trial. Holmes did not answer questions from CNBC as she walked into the courthouse. It'll be something I know lots of people will be watching.
An update on the housing market. With home prices at record highs, demand for single-family rental homes is soaring, and so are the rents. Single-family rents were up 5.3% in April. That's the largest gain in nearly 15 years. Rents for single-family detached homes, as opposed to townhomes, were up even higher, 7.9%, as millennials in particular seek more outdoor space. The rise in rents came across all categories, although higher-priced homes saw the biggest percentage jump.
The story in the Wall Street Journal today talking about how office workers are still staying home. You know, everybody's back at the restaurants, stores are open, but right now, only about 3 out of 10 workers, white-collar workers, are back in offices in cities like New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., that has not really happened yet. And I got to wonder if that's a function of the summertime or if that is going to change, if this is just like the new work reality. My guess is it's something that will change a little bit more as we get closer to the summer, to the end of the summer.
Oh, I think there's a big move happening. There's, from what I know, there's a whole move afoot in certain parts of the country in early July, and then in terms of getting back to the office. And then there's going to be sort of a second push, which might even be bigger, post Labor Day. Now, whether that turns into 5 days a week, that may not happen, but maybe it turns into 3 or 4 days a week. So I think that. You know, give it 2 or 3 months. And, you know, my view is that by Christmas, even the hybrid work thing is going to be over. I think we're going to be, you know, the world will back to a sort of 4 or 5 day a week situation.
You know, it makes sense to me that this is a problem that is especially a problem in the urban areas, because that's where it's more complicated. If you have to take public transportation, if you're trying to drive in and park. Mike and I were just talking, there's nowhere to park on the streets now because all of the restaurants have opened up and taken over the spots that are there. So if this is what it looks like with only 3 out of 10 workers back, I can't imagine what it's going to look like when there are 10 out of 10.
Well, whoever the next mayor is of New York City is going to have to deal with a very thorny problem of the restaurants. I think a lot of us New Yorkers love the restaurants out in the streets, but creates all sorts of issues with vehicles and parking and trash.
You can't have 4 million people coming into the city commuting every day.
So many other things. So we'll see.
I see what happens in those restaurant kiosks before 5 a.m. You know, before 5 a.m., those places are closed, but they're not empty. So think about that before you sit down in one of those the next time.
The truth is, though, I desperately want this is an opportunity for a lot of the restaurants in New York City to get back some of the revenue that they lost during the year. In part because it creates, in some cases, double or triple the amount of seating they used to have. So right. I don't think that anybody's going to really even address that issue till come fall 2022. I can't imagine anyone's going to even touch it till then. And then the question is whether the city is going to want to actually start to effectively require rent for either those places or require much more costly sort of build outs of these things for safety reasons and other things. So it's going to change, but we'll see.
Well, there is a faction, of course, Andrew, that says, hey, this did what we've been trying to do all along, which is de-emphasize cars in Manhattan. So we'll see if that lasts.
Good luck with de-emphasizing commuters with that. Right. If it comes hand in hand, that's one thing.
Next on Squawk Pod, the international summit we've all been waiting for.
It is an honor and a pleasure for Switzerland to host you here for this summit.
President Biden meets with Russia's Vladimir Putin. New York Times columnist Tom Friedman on the diplomatic agenda.
I have no doubt that Biden does not intend to leave that villa in Geneva without conveying to Putin on the cyber issue in particular that we will respond in kind and then some to further Russian hacks of our companies and our government system.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
How do you land your dream job? It starts by acing the interview. Learn exactly what hiring managers are looking for with CNBC Make It's new career boosting online course. Get the limited time offer. Register now at cnbcmakeit.com/courses.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod from CNBC. And today we're taking you to Geneva, Switzerland for a moment in international diplomacy, a summit on the global stage between the leaders of the United States and Russia in a time of cyber attacks, election interference, and trade concerns. It all started during our TV broadcast this morning about lunchtime in Switzerland. Here's what that sounded like.
President Joe Biden arriving for his meeting with Vladimir Putin, the Swiss president greeting him. President Putin arriving just a short time ago.
Mr. President of the Russian Federation, Mr. President of the United States of America, on behalf of the Swiss government, I would like to welcome you to Geneva, the city of peace.
I want to get straight over to Eamon Javers with more. Eamon.
Andrew, we don't expect the president to take questions here as he gets out of the beast. On his way into the Villa Grange here in Geneva, Vladimir Putin was asked a number of questions. Reporters on the ground are telling us that he was asked by reporters there who shouted questions at him as he arrived.
How are you feeling, Mr. President?
Will you come to any agreements?
Do you trust President Biden, sir?
Why do you fear Navalny so much?
Can you trust Joe Biden? What do you expect to accomplish here? Will you release Navalny, his political opponent, who is in prison currently? Putin ignoring all those questions. You can expect our colleagues in the press corps on site will shout similar questions at Joe Biden here as he exits the vehicle. And we expect he will ignore those questions as well. But you have to shout nonetheless. So as we see the arrival here, this is Biden being greeted by the Swiss president. Who we do expect to see making a few remarks momentarily as the President of the United States poses here for a handshake and a photo op and a smile.
What would you consider a win today, Mr. President? How are you feeling?
On his way into what is going to be an intense 4 to 5 hours of negotiations between himself and the President of Russia. We don't expect the two men to be alone together at any point. We do expect translators and aides, Foreign Minister of Russia, the Secretary of State of the United States, to be in the room at all times to monitor the conversation as it moves along. And we do expect that this will take several hours, but aides have told us, Andrew, that this is going to be free-flowing. There's no set schedule, as carefully choreographed as this arrival is that you're seeing right now. There is no set schedule to the rest of the afternoon. It is just after 1 p.m. here in Geneva, and they have the rest of the day now to go through a series of issues on everything from cybersecurity, nuclear weapons, dissidents and human rights, the treatment of people around the world, the interference in foreign elections. So many issues for the two men to hash through to see if they can find any agreement, but low expectations being offered by the Russian side and by the American side for any major breakthroughs here. We're not expecting them to sign anything at the end of this. We're not expecting to see any new treaties. Biden has said simply that he wants a stable and normalized relationship with Vladimir Putin.
I have a very trivial question for you, Eamon. I noticed that handshakes
okay,
are back.
Okay, I may
back,
not know the answer.
Apparently. No, are handshakes back? Because I noticed during the G7, it was all elbow bumps, right? And then just now, I saw a whole number of handshakes. Is it different in Switzerland?
Handshakes are creeping in. I've got to say there's a lot more mask wearing here in Switzerland than there is back in the D.C. area where they've already lowered a lot of the public mask wearing. People are wearing masks indoors here. Low-level interactions, there's a lot of awkward waving and hand clasping and bowing and stuff. People are still avoiding handshakes. But for the high-level things, the big set piece, the greeting of the guy who could be your next boss, all that sort of thing, handshakes are coming back at the high end, and I think they're going to work their way. They're going to trickle their way down to the rest of us eventually.
Okay.
How will you pressure Putin today?
Do you feel prepared, Mr. President?
Will you find common ground?
Tom Friedman, foreign affairs columnist for the New York Times, is with us this morning. I want to get your thoughts on this meeting that we're seeing take place in front of us live. If you were whispering in the ear of President Biden right now, you'd be telling him what?
Well, thanks for having me, Andrew. I'd be telling him there are really two things we need out of this meeting. Number one is to let Putin know that if he considers any more adventures in Europe, Ukraine, Crimea, things like that, to boost his popularity at home, to trigger the kind of nationalism he needs at a time of flagging support, he better think twice about that. That the old guy, the Trump guy, he's not here anymore. And that we would, coalesce our allies to resist that. More important for America, though, is the second message you'd want him to convey to Putin. And it's on deterring their use of, you know, cyber technology to attack our electoral system and our companies. And there, I think the most effective message would be for Biden to reach into his breast pocket and pull out transcripts of Putin's last 10 conversations with his mistress and let him know that we are onto him. We can respond in kind and then some. And we will do so, that the other guy isn't there anymore. And those are the two things we need out of this summit. Most of all this other talk of happy talk about climate change and whatnot. This summit is much more important for Putin and his status at home than it is for us. But on these two deterrence questions, I think that's vital.
Do you think the conversations actually happen like that? I ask completely seriously, which is to say, how do you have these, what I imagine have to be very difficult, complicated discussions?
You know, I've never been in one, so I can't say for sure, although I've read about them. But it may not be quite that blunt, but I have no doubt that Biden does not intend to leave that villa in Geneva without conveying to Putin on the cyber issue in particular, which is now kind of the nuclear missile issue of our age of the Cold War, on the cyber issue that we will respond in kind and then some to further Russian hacks of our companies and our government system.
And when you think about the press conference that we're going to see a little bit later today, after however many hours this meeting takes place, I imagine there will be dueling press conferences with dueling versions of what happened and dueling versions of wins that come out of a meeting like this. How do you think we should reconcile that or think about that even in advance?
Well, again, to be honest, Andrew, I think the whole thing's been overblown because we actually, other than those deterrence questions, there's not much we want from Russia. You know, Russia's main export, 52%, is oil and gas. All they really sell to the world is, that we are interested in is vodka, caviar, and matryoshka dolls. All right. 2% of Russia's exports are computers, and advanced technology like that. I mean, do you know anyone with a Russian watch or Russian computer? So, you know, this is a country that really has under Putin thrown everything into, basically drilling the ground and not unlocking the talent of its people. It's just not that much we have to discuss. The problem for us is that Vladimir Putin has been America's ex-boyfriend from hell. America's ex-boyfriend from hell. He just won't go away. We really want to date other people. We really want to focus on China. But he won't go away because his relationship with us, his ability to say, I'm meeting as an equal with the American president, just like my predecessors did, is so important for building his flagging support at home.
The ex-boyfriend from hell is one way to put it. You mentioned China. Let's go there. You saw President Biden meeting with the other leaders of the G7, effectively to try to create some kind of leverage, if you will, against China. I'm curious how successful you think that will be.
You know, I will tell you, in talking to American business leaders in recent weeks, who have been talking to their European counterparts, you know, there's still a lot of wariness in Europe about where America is after the last 4 years of being hit with tariffs and whatnot. I think the most important part of this trip is what happened with Biden's meetings at NATO and even more importantly, the European Union. The only way, Andrew, for us to effectively deal with China is with a coalition of all the major Western economies. You know, the Cold War was fought and won in Berlin with Russia. The Cold War with China will be fought and won with Berlin, in Berlin. What I mean by that is, which side has the European Union centered in Germany with it is the side that will have the most leverage. Will the EU tilt toward China? Will it tilt toward us? That's still in more play, than I would be comfortable with. So I think that was very important, rebuilding that coalition so we can go to the negotiating table with China and say, let me introduce you to my allies over here. They're called Korea and Japan. Let me introduce you to my allies over here. They're called the European Union. And together, we're going to come at you in pursuit of universal, values, rules and norms on trade. That, to me, is the key issue.
Photo next. Photo Swiss. That's him.
Now you see President Biden along with Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Vladimir Putin along with his Minister of Foreign Affairs, Sergei Lavrov. Let's skip back over to Eamon to hear a little bit more about what's happening here. Eamon.
Yeah, what we don't know is exactly what's going to be the format of all of this. We do know that they have some breakout sessions planned, and the two leaders will not be alone in the room at any time. There'll be some translators and note takers there as well on both sides. But this is fascinating to get an inside the room glimpse now of the two leaders looking fairly casual. And this is going to be a huge contrast both in the United States and around the world of the photos that we saw of Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, right? This is Joe Biden attempting to turn a page from the Trump era and the Trump relationship with Russia, which was certainly quite close. And I was there in Helsinki when President Trump said that he trusted Vladimir Putin's take on what had happened over the U.S. intelligence community. And now we're hearing Biden and Putin exchanging a few words of pleasantries here. This will be a very different feel in Geneva than what we saw in Helsinki.
Hey, Eamon, we've set this up as a much more contentious relationship, but it is coming just after Biden didn't block the pipeline over the Ukraine's objections for all of this. We talked to people earlier this week who said that this was maybe more of a gift to Germany than to Russia, but Russia still got its way. How do you kind of build that into this backdrop?
Yeah. Well, there have been real questions here about Biden's decision on that front. Biden acceded to the wishes of the Germans on the Nord Stream pipeline. The Russians clearly want that as well. It's seen as making the Germans more dependent on Russian fuel and therefore more susceptible to Russian manipulation. That said, the Biden administration ultimately agreed to go along with what the Germans wanted on that front. The other big criticism of Biden here domestically in the United States going into this meeting is that it's coming too early in his first term, according to the critics. They say that Biden hasn't carefully thought through exactly what he wants out of this meeting. So there are some stakes here in terms of domestic politics for Biden to prove that this was the right time for this meeting, that he can get something tangible out of it, and then some stakes on the world stage in terms of these negotiations, in terms of pipelines and troop movements, cybersecurity, and all the rest of the issues that are on the table between the two men.
Hey, Eamon, I don't know if you heard Tom Friedman, but in this last interview we had while you were waiting, but one of the things that Tom said is that President Biden effectively should talk tough with Putin right there in the room. At one point, he said he even suggested that he should take out transcripts of phone calls with Putin's mistresses. My question to you, as somebody who's covered cybersecurity for a long time, is how does the president approach these things? Do they actually come with transcripts, not necessarily of mistresses per se, but of cyber crimes and other evidence, so that when potentially a Putin or another leader says we weren't responsible for that, they then lay it out on the table? How does that happen? How does that work?
That's a really great question. And having not been in the room for one of these, I can't tell you exactly whether they've come prepared for, sort of the ultimate document dump, so to speak. But presumably, if Vladimir Putin, if he does have mistresses, U.S. intelligence would be interested in that and possibly aware of it. But the behind the scenes conversation between the two might take place on a more high level than that. That is, that both sides have elaborate intelligence operations around the world. Both sides know sort of what the other side knows about each other. It may just simply be understood that the United States knows what the Russians are doing here. Now, maybe for dramatic effect, Biden might want to put the evidence on the table, but each side knows what the other side has been doing to a large degree. One of the questions is how tough do you get with Putin behind the scenes versus in public in terms of your public rhetoric? We saw Biden sort of holding back when he was asked about that question earlier in the week about his comment that Vladimir Putin is a killer. Biden gave a long, meandering, awkward answer to that question, and you could tell, you could sort of see the gears turning in Biden's mind as he tried to come up with a formulation for his answer that wasn't going to provoke Vladimir Putin. People who've dealt with Putin in the past tell me that it's vitally important for his ego and for his domestic political situation not to humiliate him on the world stage, to treat him as an equal. And the psychological effect of that will go a long way in these negotiations. Now, behind the scenes, you can certainly talk a lot tougher than you can maybe on the public stage, Andrew.
I want to bring Tom Friedman back into the conversation if we could, because, Tom, you have covered President Biden for a very long time, and maybe you can speak to this issue. And I know you haven't necessarily been in these kinds of rooms, but to the extent that President Biden wants to or feels a need to talk tough with Putin. How does he do it, given what you know about his temperament and sensibility?
Well, you know, I traveled with now President Biden, then Senator Biden, on a trip to Afghanistan, actually, right after 9/11. So I actually got to see him in action a lot. And he's someone who's very familiar, you know, with the issues. He's comfortable talking about foreign affairs. He's had a lot of experience as a senator, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and then vice president. And so he knows how this is done. I'm sure they've gamed it out. And I'm sure they've gone into this meeting, Andrew, saying, what are the one, two, or three things we must convey to Putin that he cannot leave Geneva without being clear on them? And certainly number one there is the continued hacking of our economy. And to literally say to him, you're vacuuming up all this data. What the hell are you doing with it all? I mean, you know, you're still just exporting oil and gas. What are you doing with all these credit card numbers? I mean, are you going on some giant Amazon buy? I mean, what are you collecting all this stuff for?
And what do you think he would say, though, Tom, when President Putin, I imagine, has to say, we're not responsible for this. If there are things happening in our country, they're independent actors, or whatever kind of response we've heard over the years about these kinds of activities.
Yeah, I mean,
cybersecurity issues.
Yeah, of course he won't admit any of it. He'll say, me? I mean, all these stories. By the way, Andrew, he loves this. He loves the fact that everyone is accusing him of manipulating America's elections, of attacking our government computer systems and the biggest corporations in America. So back home, he loves that. Look at me, the whole world is afraid of me. Because back home, you know, he's facing a flagging economy and lagging popularity. And so anything that makes him look like Biden's peer and equal on the world stage is a good thing. And the reason they denied him a joint press conference afterwards is precisely to deny him that.
Okay. Tom Friedman, thank you for making us smarter this morning. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrew.
How do you land your dream job? It starts by acing the interview. Go to cnbcmakeit.com/courses to register now and learn exactly what hiring managers are looking for with CNBC Make It's new career-boosting online course, where experts share their secrets for a dynamic resume, coming across with confidence, what to wear, and more. For a limited time, save 50% with our introductory offer. Register now at cnbcmakeit.com/courses.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Thanks to Mike Santoli for sitting in earlier today. You can tune into the show weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. And please listen and follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
You guys are clear. Thank you very much.
How do you land your dream job? It starts by acing the interview. Learn exactly what hiring managers are looking for with CNBC Make It's new career-boosting online course. Get the limited-time offer. Register now at cnbcmakeit.com/courses.